Be safe, whatever you do.
This is VOA News reporting via remote. I'm Richard Green. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky heard firsthand what people in recaptured northeastern towns experienced under Russian forces. Zelensky on Wednesday made a surprise visit to Izium until 4 days ago, Russia's main stronghold and logistics hub in the region, where he watched as the Ukrainian flag was raised in front of the charred city council building. Russian forces suffered a stunning reversal this month after Ukrainian troops made a rapid advance in Kharkiv region, forcing a hasty withdrawal by Russian forces. Meanwhile, the largest city in central Ukraine struggled to contain damage to its water system from Russian missile attacks. Officials say Kryvyi Rih, which had an estimated pre-war population of 650,000, was targeted by 8 cruise missiles on Wednesday. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden is charging 3 Iranian citizens in a broad hacking campaign. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The Justice Department says the cyber attacks targeted power companies and local governments, small businesses, and nonprofits. It accuses the suspects of targeting victims in the U.S. and elsewhere, stealing data from networks, and demanding ransom payments to return it. The accused hackers have not been arrested. A department official says they're thought to be in Iran, and the charges make it functionally impossible for them to leave. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A senior Armenian official says Armenia and Azerbaijan negotiated a ceasefire to end a flare-up of fighting that has killed 155 soldiers on both sides. The secretary of Armenia's Security Council announced the truce in televised remarks early Thursday, saying it took effect at 8 p.m. local time Wednesday. A previous ceasefire brokered by Russia on Tuesday quickly failed. This is VOA News. The announcement follows 2 days of heavy fighting that marked the largest outbreak of hostilities between the two longtime adversaries in nearly 2 years. Shortly before the announcement, thousands of protesters took to the streets of Armenia's capital, accusing the prime minister of betraying his country by trying to appease Azerbaijan and demanding his resignation. Ahead of a railway strike deadline in the U.S., one union has said no to a tentative deal. AP correspondent Mike Garcia reports.
Members of one union have rejected a tentative contract with the largest freight railroads in the U.S. just days ahead of a strike deadline. About 4,900 members of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers District 19 voted to reject the contract. There are 12 unions, one with 2 separate divisions, and all must agree to the tentative deals to avert the Friday strike deadline. So far, 9 unions have agreed to tentative deals. Not only would a rail strike disrupt the nation's supply chain, but passenger rail would also be impacted because Amtrak and many commuter railroads operate on tracks owned by freight railroads. I'm Mike Garcia.
A right-wing coalition that includes a nationalist anti-immigration party won a narrow majority in Sweden's parliament Wednesday. It was a major political shift in the Scandinavian country that had a decades-long history of welcoming refugees, but is now grappling with a crime wave linked with immigration. Center-left Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson has conceded defeat with nearly 100% of the vote from the weekend elections counted. Prime Minister Andersson says she will step down on Thursday. Recapping our top story. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky heard firsthand what people in recaptured northeastern towns experienced under Russian forces. Zelensky on Wednesday made a surprise visit to Izium until 4 days ago, Russia's main stronghold and logistics hub in the region, where he watched as the Ukrainian flag was raised in front of the charred city council building. Russian forces suffered a stunning reversal this month after Ukrainian troops made a rapid advance in Kharkiv region, forcing a hasty withdrawal by Russian forces. Meanwhile, the largest city in central Ukraine struggled to contain damage to its water system from Russian missile attacks. Officials say the city of Kryvyi Rih, which had an estimated pre-war population of 650,000, was targeted by 8 cruise missiles on Wednesday. You can find more on this story and all the stories we're covering. Visit us at voanews.com. We also have an app that you can download on your mobile phone. Just search for VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Today is Thursday, September 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Ukraine's president tore cities reclaimed from Russia as Germany says it is too early to tell if recent gains mark a turning point in the war.
80% of the city, and this was also confirmed by the Ukrainian officials, is destroyed. There are no bridges, and only one bridge was restored quickly for the President Zelensky visit.
Tension rises in the Korean Peninsula as Seoul and Pyongyang adopt a preemptive nuclear strike option.
Tensions are rising here. They have been over the last several months. The expectation is that they will continue to rise sort of as each side shows its military capabilities.
And the casket of Queen Elizabeth II leaves Buckingham Palace for the last time to Westminster Hall. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. German Defense Minister Christine Lambrecht said on Wednesday that it's too early to tell whether Ukraine's significant territorial advances in recent days mark a turning point in the war prompted by Russia's invasion of its neighbor. This as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky toured the recently free city of Izium. Zelensky called the site shocking but not surprising after first witnessing the destruction of Bucha. Reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv has more on the president's visit to recently freed cities and provides an update on the war to Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller.
Basically, they are saying that 80% of the city, and this was also confirmed by the Ukrainian officials, is destroyed. There are no bridges left, and only one bridge was restored quickly for the President Zelensky visit. It's a walking bridge, so for the moment, Ukrainian soldiers are creating these pontoon bridges over the river so people can actually go to the other side of the city because the city of Izium is divided by the Seversky-Donetsk River. In general, connection is still very problematic, but Ukrainian soldiers are going around the town, patrolling systems, and this makes possible for people to get in touch with their relatives and make calls via internet connection. For the moment, also we're hearing that a lot of humanitarian organizations from all over the world, including Ukrainian, are coming to Izium and to other cities in the Kharkiv region and villages that were liberated recently. So in terms of the products and first aid help, situation is getting much better.
Turning to the ongoing fighting, there have been reports of renewed shelling in the city of Mykolaiv. What do we know about what happened there, as well as what is being reported by Ukrainian authorities as their counteroffensive continues?
According to the official information and to the confirmed information from the Ukrainian side, heavy fightings are continuing in the Donbas region. We do not hear any information about any advances, both from Ukrainian or Russian side. Ukrainian officials are not giving a lot of details while operation is ongoing. The city of Mykolaiv was under very heavy shelling over the night. According to the mayor of the city, a lot of civilian residential areas were damaged. We don't have information about victims or wounded people, and also the information about the damages is being clarified. So for the moment, I don't have any particular numbers. But also during the day today, it was two air raid sirens that covered the whole territory of Ukraine. They happened one after another, so just 3 minutes difference between them. And during this air alarm, the city of Kryvyi Rih was shelled. We know that explosion was heard, and this was confirmed by the mayor of the town, but for the moment, no information. Actually, the city of Kryvyi Rih, is a hometown of President Zelensky, and this shelling happened right after his visit of the Kharkiv region.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller from Kyiv. The Kremlin said on Wednesday that Ukraine's ongoing ambitions to join the Western NATO military alliance presented a threat to Russia's security and highlighted the necessity for Russia to conduct what it calls, quote, special military operation, unquote, in Ukraine. In a conference call with reporters, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said the idea of Ukraine joining NATO was, quote, the main threat, unquote, to Russia, which, quote, emphasizes the relevance and urgent need to ensure our security and our national interests, unquote. Before Russia sent tens of thousands of troops into Ukraine in February, Moscow was demanding legal guarantees that Ukraine never be admitted to to the military alliance. As Russia faces further isolation from the West after its invasion of Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping will meet in Uzbekistan, a gathering that should indicate the strength of the cooperation between the two countries. Marcus Hurton narrates this report from the VOA Moscow Bureau.
Samarkand, the ancient Uzbek city that once linked the Mediterranean with China through the Silk Road, is the scene of a meeting that is full of geopolitical nuances. This city, this week, will host the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit, where Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping will meet for the first time since Russia invaded Ukraine. Russia has looked to China for relief from international sanctions and wants to strengthen its ties with Beijing. But it's an unequal relationship. Some analysts say China sees Russia as a political partner, not an economic one. Alexei Malashenko is with the Dialogue of Civilizations Research Institute in Moscow.
What is the volume of trade between Russia and China? This is the best partner of Russia, isn't it? $143 billion. What is the volume of trade between China and the United States? And they are adversaries, but it is $700 billion.
Russia may not be China's largest trading partner, but Beijing now represents Moscow's largest political partner. Kirill Babaev directs Moscow's Institute of China and Modern Asia.
In terms of geopolitical affairs, Russia and China share similar views on the West and the Asia-Pacific region.
They also have an adversarial relationship with the United States.
Russia and China have got an important common opponent, the United States of America, whose relations with Russia are completely spoiled and are consistently deteriorating with China. That naturally makes Russia and China closer to each other.
This is the Chinese leader's first trip outside his country since the start of the COVID crisis, and the decision to hold the meeting in Uzbekistan highlights the area's strategic importance.
Central Asia is also a transit region. This is the first point. Secondly, there are China's real economic interest. That is quite clear. But you know, I would say that the Chinese are a sort of philosophers of politics. They perfectly realize anyway that Central Asia will never escape their influence.
With Russia isolated from the West and China striking a difficult political balance between politics and business, Moscow hopes to use the meeting between Putin and Xi to strengthen the only remaining bridge it has since its decision to attack Ukraine. For the VOA Moscow Bureau, Marcus Harton, VOA News.
Tension is rising in the Korean Peninsula as Seoul and Pyongyang adopt a preemptive nuclear strike option as animosity between the two neighbors deepens. South Korea has warned the North government that using its nuclear weapons would, quote, put it on a path of self-destruction, unquote. It says recent legislation in North Korea allowing the preemptive use of its bombs would only prompt Seoul and Washington to bolster their joint military capabilities. South Korea's defense ministry said the country will sharply boost its own preemptive attack plans, missile defense, and massive retaliation capabilities while seeking a greater U.S. security commitment. For more, I spoke with VOA's Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo.
Tensions are rising here. They have been over the last several months. The expectation is that they will continue to rise sort of as each side shows its military capabilities. Each side sort of releases somewhat aggressive statements. The thought is that we aren't near the bottom yet. There is still an expectation that North Korea will conduct a nuclear test sometime in the coming weeks or months.
The response from the South to North Korea's new nuclear posture is also what experts are saying extreme based on the history of that country. They tend to de-escalate, but now they're also coming up and meeting the North, rhetoric for rhetoric.
It is dangerous, I think. And most people would acknowledge that when a nuclear-armed country is sort of engaging in threats with another country about the use of its nuclear weapons, that definitely is something that is dangerous. And it's not that we have not seen statements like this or somewhat similar to this from South Korea in the past. However, you are seeing a bit more urgency by the South Korean side. Well, because frankly, the situation has changed since the conservatives were last in power here. North Korea has many nuclear weapons. They have many ways to deliver those nuclear weapons. That is a relatively new development. North Korea has always had the ability to hurt South Korea in many ways with conventional weapons, with chemical weapons, things like that. But the fact that it now has nuclear weapons sort of unquestionably is a somewhat new challenge for the South Korean government. So they are really, especially this latest conservative government, is really clinging tightly to the United States, which obviously it depends on for protection. The U.S. has about 28,000 troops here. South Korea wants the U.S. to show even more commitment, sort of deterrence commitment, in the form of bringing nuclear-capable bombers and ships to South Korea and the region in order to show that North Korea, look, you may have nuclear weapons, but we have a lot bigger nuclear weapons on our side.
Both nations are hurling insults across the border. Is there a possibility of a meeting? Is there a possibility of de-escalation?
It seems not, and that is not for the lack of the United States and South Korea's sort of desire to hold talks. It's that North Korea does not seem to be in a position right now where it wants to or feels it needs to hold talks. Instead, you're seeing North Korea improve its relationship with both China and Russia, who also have incentives to use North Korea as sort of a cudgel against the United States.
That's VOA Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo speaking with me from the South Korean capital. UN investigators warn millions of Syrians who have endured more than a decade of war are likely to face more death and injury as fighting intensifies along the country's northern borders. The Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Syria will submit a report of its latest findings to the UN Human Rights Council next week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report finds a significant reduction in the number of government airstrikes in northwest Syria during the period under review between January 1st and June 30th. However, the three-member commission notes hostilities escalated significantly in Idlib and Aleppo, the last rebel stronghold, in August. It says civilians bear the brunt of the intensified fighting. The report details attacks in northern Aleppo that have killed and injured at least 92 civilians, destroyed civilian homes, schools, mosques, medical facilities, and administrative buildings. Commission Chair Paolo Pinheiro says scores of civilians, including children, have been killed and injured in fighting between pro-government forces and armed opposition groups.
In addition, Russia is still actively supporting the Syrian government, particularly concerning airstrikes that have killed civilians and targeted food and water sources. Families living in frontline areas have borne the brunt of pro-government forces ground-to-ground shelling in those areas.
Pinheiro says there continues to be military involvement in this protracted conflict by Israel, the United States, and Turkey.
I must say that Syria cannot afford a return to large-scale fighting, but that is where it may perhaps be heading.
The report highlights the worsening conditions in Al-Hol camp, where tens of thousands of former wives and children of Islamic State militants are being held. Pinheiro says the situation of children in Al-Hol and other camps in the northeast are in a particularly concerning situation.
They lack sufficient health care and education, and many are traumatized by the violence within those camps.
The report notes tens of thousands of Syrians remain forcibly disappeared or missing. It says families searching for their loved ones, often undertaken by women, are in danger of being arrested, extorted, and abused. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, Queen Elizabeth's casket has left Buckingham Palace for the last time. Her casket borne to Westminster Hall by a horse-drawn gun carriage in a somber procession. Her son, King Charles III, and his siblings and sons marched behind the coffin, which was topped by a wreath of white roses and her crown resting on a purple velvet pillow. At Westminster Hall, crowds shuffled in two lines past her coffin well into the night. Many bowed or curtsied, and some were in tears. Hundreds of thousands of people are expected to pay their respects. The Queen will lie in state until her funeral on Monday. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. As the war in Ethiopia rages on, the head of the main hospital in the Tigray region's capital says two airstrikes Wednesday morning have killed at least 10 people. Fred Harter reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The first airstrike hit Mekele, the regional capital of Ethiopia's Tigray region, at around 7:30 a.m. Wednesday morning, according to Dr. Kibrom Gebreselassie, the director of the flagship Ada Hospital in the capital. The Tigray region's leadership and doctors at the hospital say the Ethiopian government is using drones for the latest attacks. VOA could not independently verify these allegations. The second occurred shortly afterward. According to Dr. Kibrom, the attacks hit a residential part of the city, attacking civilians. In total, he said, 10 deaths have been confirmed so far. Hospital officials said that other cases were being rushed to surgery at both Ida and the nearby Mekele General Hospital. A surgeon at Ida Hospital told the Reuters news agency that the first strike hit rescuers who were trying to help people injured by the first attack. Wednesday's airstrikes are the latest of several to hit Mekele since the fighting resumed in Tigray in late August. The hostilities ended a truce declared by the federal government in March, which had allowed much-needed aid supplies to reach the northern region. On Sunday, the Tigray regional leadership called for a cessation of hostilities and said they had set up a team of mediators ready to enter peace talks with the federal government, which has yet to formally respond to the statement. Since then, heavy fighting has been reported along Tigray's northern, southern, and western borders. Fred Harter for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Thank you, Fred. U.S. Special Envoy on Climate John Kerry has pledged U.S. support to help Nigeria mitigate the effects of climate change. After meeting with Nigerian Environmental Minister, Kerry said Africa's most populous nation would benefit from a $12 billion fund for climate action. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The special U.S. envoy on climate change, John Kerry, began a two-nation West Africa visit Monday in the Nigerian capital, where he met with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. The aim of Kerry's Africa visit is to promote climate action by encouraging more government and private sector involvement. In Abuja Tuesday, Kerry met with top government officials, including ministers of environment, petroleum resources, and agriculture, and signed the Clean Energy Demand Initiative. He said the agreement allows the U.S. government to assist Nigeria in developing technologies for cleaner fuel sources, including gas, wind, and solar energy.
Nigeria is a very important, if not one of the most important countries in terms of the direction of dealing with climate for all of Africa, because Nigeria is a major producer of gas and oil, and how Nigeria approaches the climate crisis will send a message to the rest of the continent, will help set the direction of our dealing with the climate crisis.
But Abba Ali Yarima, co-founder of the Green Panthers Foundation, a nonprofit that advocates for those affected by climate change, says the gesture was long overdue.
As someone who has been in the climate change cycle for quite some years, I think this is something we should have gotten since, because Africa in general, a continent of more than 55 countries, but we account to carbon emission of nothing more than 3.8%. compared to the global north. We believe that there should be repatriations by all these developed countries who have emitted more carbon gases than we did here in Africa. Even the $12 billion US dollars is quite small.
Nigerian authorities have been making efforts to address climate change issues. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Time for the U.S. Politics edition of the program. Can the Democrats who hold the White House, Senate, and House of Representatives defy the odds of losing seats in the upcoming congressional midterm elections? Polls indicate that while the Republicans are favored to win enough seats to control the lower chamber, Democrats have a strong shot at retaining control of the upper chamber or Senate. Prospects for the midterms on Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Every year, world leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there, delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and colleague Carol Van Dam as we discuss the challenges and progress being made by organizations and governments combating human trafficking and forced labor with guest Terry Fitzpatrick, director of the Alliance to End Slavery and Trafficking. Join us for PCUSA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issue City News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by the decision by the Hanoi People's High Court to uphold the 9-year prison sentence of renowned Vietnamese author and journalist Pham Doi Trang. As State Department spokesperson Ned Price noted in a statement expressing concerns over the decision, Trang is recognized internationally for her work to advance human rights and good governance in Vietnam and was a 2022 winner of the Secretary of State's International Women of Courage Award. Trang was arrested in October 2020 and sentenced in December 2021 to 9 years in prison under Article 117 of Vietnam's Criminal Code, which criminalizes making, storing, distributing, or disseminating information, documents, and items against the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. International human rights organizations have called Article 117 a tool to silence individuals who are critical of the government, whether they are journalists, writers, or citizens exercising their fundamental right to free expression. The UN Working Group of Arbitrary Detention found Trang's detention to be arbitrary and in contravention of Vietnam's international human rights commitments and obligations. The government held Trang in pretrial custody for a year without allowing her access to a lawyer. In the nearly 2 years she has been detained, Trang's health has reportedly suffered. Spokesperson Price said the United States urges Vietnam to ensure adequate medical care and to allow access to Trang to assess her medical condition. In its most recent report on human rights conditions in Vietnam, the State Department cited NGOs that estimated as of August 2021, authorities held between 130 and 288 persons for political reasons. The State Department wrote, from January 1st to November 9th, authorities detained 29 and convicted 27 persons who were exercising internationally recognized human rights, such as freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, and association. Spokesperson Price said, Trang's continued detention is the latest instance in an alarming pattern of arrests and sentencing of individuals in Vietnam for peacefully expressing their opinions. We call on the Vietnamese government to release Trang and to allow all individuals in Vietnam to exercise their right to freedom of expression without fear of retaliation, consistent with the human rights provisions in Vietnam's constitution and Vietnam's international obligations and commitments.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.